this morning and I looked around. I said to myself, what have I found? I got a funny feeling that there's something wrong. Went into the kitchen to find the food was gone. Went to the bedroom and put on my clothes. Walked into the street to find the shops were closed. There were no trams running and the petrol was all gone. People in a panic, all hysterical and crying. So we all yelled out, forgive us.
G'day fellow Israelites and welcome to episode 7 of Christian Identity Australia. My name is Obadiah 118, or Obi if you want to save money on syllables, and I am your host. Episode 7, who would have believed it? I mean, it was just a few short years ago I did episode 1. What can I say? Like a Muslim polygamist on a diet high in zinc, I just keep churning them out. I open the show with a greeting to fellow Israelites. Israelites are not to be confused with Jews, though they usually are. Centuries of Jew balderdash has seen to that. In John chapter 8, verse 44, Christ called the Jews the children of the devil, and since he cannot tell a lie, children of the devil they must be. So how come Judeo-Christian churches teach that the Jews are God's chosen people? Here's another question. If Christianity is Jewish, why does the word Judeo need to be placed before the word Christianity? The answer to the first question is found in the second. Judeo-Christian churches are churches that have been heavily infiltrated and influenced by Jews. This is why they're called Judeo-Christian. If a Nazi were to call himself a Judeo-Nazi or a white nationalist a Judeo-white nationalist, what would that tell you about him? It would tell you he's not a genuine Nazi or white nationalist, would it not? No Jew-wise member of the pro-white movement is going to use a title that signifies a philosophical alliance with our race's mortal enemies. Thus, a Judeo-Christian church is Christian in name only. Both the Bible and history prove that the Jews are not Israel. God promised Abraham that his descendants would be a blessing to all nations of the earth. Name one nation that has been blessed by having Jews reside in it. The Jews aren't even a blessing in their own country. Israel, which in the Bible is a people, not a place, receives billions of dollars in foreign aid from America every year. Why does it need any aid? Doesn't God, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, promise his holy race that he will provide for them abundantly? Back in far more pragmatic times, the Jews were kicked out of nearly every country in Europe, sometimes twice or more. Raging anti-Semitism often cops the blame for this, but that couldn't have been responsible, since the Jews wouldn't have been allowed to settle in the host countries to begin with, much less multiple times. They got the bums rush purely because of their behaviour. The host populations refused to put up with their slimy business practices and hatred of white people and Christianity, hatred that drove them to aid and abet Muslim incursions of European countries and commit the ritual murder of Christian children. Jewish ritual murder may sound like the product of an overactive bigoted imagination, but it has been documented in a number of books such as Jewish Ritual Murder by Arnold Leese, Maxo of Zion by Mustafa Talas, and Jewish Ritual Murder, A Historical Investigation by Helmut Schramm. One of the world's worst-kept secrets is that the Jews run Hollywood. Not just Hollywood, but all of mainstream American film and television. Jews script the productions, Jews direct the productions, Jews star in the productions, Jews finance the productions. Think of all the movies and TV series produced in the last 20 years that depict buggery, lesbianism, atheism, sexual immorality, miscegenation, and non-white immigration as life-saving medicine to an ailing white society. If Jews really are the God-sent hope of the world, why do they spend so much time, effort, and money encouraging the white race to break his commandments? Could they be the people who Christ, in Revelation chapter 2, verse 9, said were the synagogue of Satan masquerading as Jews? although a better translation of Jews would be Judahites, as in members of the tribe of Judah. The late Charles Wiseman, in his classic book Who is Esau Edom, wrote that because the Jews resented being cast as the villains in God's epic play, they set out to rewrite the script to make themselves the heroes. One of the ways they did this was to take over Christian publishing houses and use ostensibly Christian literature to promote the bull manure that they are God's elite. Of course, they couldn't play the heroes as long as the real heroes, God's true chosen people, still had those roles, so they recast the heroes as the villains. To find out who those heroes come villains are, just ask yourself, what is the one race of people you're allowed to vilify and even threaten without being fined, jailed, or called a racist? White Europeans. The Jew media portrays us proud whites as the root of all evil, but Jews as lovable innocents who make the world a better, brighter place. Look at all the Hollywood movies in which a Jew hero defeats a Germanic villain. I'm sure almost everyone has seen a teen comedy where an undernourished Forby triumphs over a gang of strapping fair-haired jocks in between winning the heart of his high school's hottest cheerleader. As Nietzsche wrote, reality is for those people who can't handle revenge of the nerds. Again, God said Abraham's seed would be a blessing to all nations. What specific blessings do Jews bring to the nations? None that I can see. Unless you count moral decay, civil unrest, economic tyranny, political corruption, and racial atrophy as blessings. But whites bring law and order, proper sanitation, financial prosperity, life-saving technology, and flourishing agriculture, oh, and the word of God. This is because white Europeans are the Israel of the Bible. You wouldn't know this, though, if all your theology comes via mainstream churches and the high-definition rabbi in your living room. These heretical sources teach that the Christ killers are the emissaries of the Most High. Why? Because the Jews have changed the script. Not that it matters to God, he is going to ensure that the great drama he authored unfolds exactly the way he intended it to, and that the actors he cast are seen in their rightful roles. On this edition of the show, I'll be giving my straggling take on Donald Trump's presidential win. I'll be looking back at the unofficial end of the White Australia policy and its disastrous impact on the racial makeup of Australia. And I'll be playing a classic Aussie rock track that is so sublime it was covered by the immortal David Hasselhoff. Unless you were born yesterday or the day after, you'd know that Donald Trump was the surprise winner in the race to the White House. Trump won by a fairly comfortable margin that would have been more comfortable if that Jew witch Hillary Clinton hadn't raised dead voters from the grave and cast a spell on illegal immigrants who, the last time I looked, weren't allowed to vote in a US election but did anyway. Coverage of Trump on the hustings by the Australian news media was as biased against him as it was in the United States and post-election continues to be. This is in stark contrast to the coverage Hillary Clinton received. The Australian media treated her as delicately as a Fabergé egg. Nary a bad word was said about the woman. As in America, when the news came through that Trump had won, the shock and horror on the faces of the media's political pundits, who had crowed that Clinton was a shoo-in for the presidency, made it very clear that objective reporting was not the rule but the rare exception. Our politicians, all bar a few of them, were just as shocked and horrified. There's a photo of our new Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, looking like a real estate agent on Judgment Day as he learns the news on his iPhone. And he's supposed to have his feet planted firmly on the conservative side of politics. If only one good thing comes out of Trump's election win, it will be that scads of white voters will have finally woken up to the entrenched left-wing bias of the mainstream news media. There was just no hiding it during the presidential campaign. Maybe some of these voters will start asking why the media tilts so steeply to the left. How did it get this way? Was it cronyism, pure happenstance? Or is there a plan to fill all of the key positions in the mainstream media with leftists? And if so, who is behind it? As to whether Trump is the, quote, ultimate saviour, unquote, a title coined by Andrew Anglin, the publisher of the super-duper popular pro-white blog The Daily Stormer, the answer is no. There is only one saviour and his name is Jesus Christ. Trump is neither a racist nor a Christian, but even if he were both, he still couldn't reverse the racial, social and spiritual cancer that has spread to every part of white society and is now terminal. The reason he couldn't is that the root cause of the cancer isn't politics or even the Jews, but our people's sin, their rejection of God and his law. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 34. Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. The word reproach means an expression of disapproval. When we sin individually or nationally, and don't repent but continue to sin, we bring God's disapproval upon us in the form of the curses listed in Deuteronomy chapter 28. One of those curses is that people not of our race will infest and take over our countries. We see this happening now in Australia, New Zealand, England, Germany, Norway, the United States, and almost every land that has been settled by whites. When my mother was dying, one of the nurses who tended to her told me she had entered her end phase. This was a nice way of saying she didn't have long to live. While she was in her end phase, her body began to shut down. She couldn't eat, drink, sleep properly, or go to the toilet and was in constant discomfort. These were all signs that her death was imminent. Our countries, too, are in their end phase for no other reason than that we as a people refuse to say no to sin. All the signs of their impending demise are there to see: the flood of non-whites, the withering economy, the overcrowded cities, the soaring crime rates, the failing infrastructure, and the destruction of our culture. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. This verse details the prescribed cure for cleansing our lands of the alien hordes and all the other problems plaguing them. Note that the cleansing or healing comes after we've repented and not before. Unfortunately, most of our people still wrap themselves feverishly around sin. Miscegenation, sodomy, infidelity, infanticide, drunkenness, slander, and every other violation of God's law are more accepted and commonplace today than packaged food. I don't see much repenting, do you? Things are going to have to get much worse before our race sees the value in repentance. How much worse? Raining nuclear warheads worse. If Trump accomplishes anything of worth during his political tenure, it will only be because God gave us a couple of extra years to wake up the last few slumbering members of his elect. It won't be because we as a people or Trump had a sudden attack of righteousness. Trump has a raffish track record of extramarital affairs and delights in his Jew grandkids. Plus, he loves that S-bend in the Middle East that's blocked with what Satan had for dinner. In 1983, he won the stupendously misnamed Tree of Life Award, which was given to him by the Jewish National Fund for his, quote, dedication to the cause of American-Israeli friendship, unquote. In 2004, he was the Grand Marshal of the Israel Day Parade, and in 2015, while giving an acceptance speech for an honour he received from the Algemeiner newspaper, he said, quote, "We love Israel. We will fight for Israel 100%. 1,000%. It will be there forever." Unquote. 2 Chronicles chapter 19, verse 2. And Jehu, the son of Hanani the seer, went out to meet him, and said to King Jehoshaphat, Should you help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath on you from before the Lord. The Jews killed Christ and have been marked for extinction by God, yet Trump says he will fight for them 1,000%. If you want to incur God's intense displeasure, that sure is a fabulous way to go about it. The only positive I can see in a Trump presidency, at this point in time anyway, is that he is a lesser evil than Hillary Clinton, but then Satan would have been a lesser evil than that bobble-headed harridan. I'm sure many American voters were cognizant of this when they cast their vote. Why vote for the Wicked Witch of the West when you can vote for the Wizard of Oz? It makes you wonder, though, whether the Jew ruling elite facilitated her presidential campaign just so the majority of voters would get behind Trump. Time will tell.
I don't eat curry, I don't eat jam, I don't drink cider and I don't like Spam. I've never tasted Vegemite, tin spaghetti or Activite. I don't go camping in a combi van, I've got heaps of uncles but none called Stan. My father doesn't play no golf, when I was small I hated Rolf. I've never joined a protest march, my garden is devoid of grass. I've got no zipper on my shoes, sidewalk surfing no can do. I don't believe in Fletcher Jones, credit cards or tasteful homes. My furniture's not made of pine, and what the hell is sleep for a wine? I don't read books by Maxie Walker. I can't say words like
Straight
or
corker.
I won't stick phrases on my kids or tell them that the wrestling's rigged. Quiet weddings, cricket matches, bungee jumping, elbow patches, health farms, antics, pride of Erin, girls called Sharon, songs by Dylan, car wash, mouthwash, acting college, Boy Scout, your shout, eating porridge. These are things us wogs would never do.
World War II was a disaster for our race, but the steady agonising decline in white civilisation that came after it was and is an even bigger one. What was it about the Second World War that set this decline in motion? After all, we whites have been slaughtering our kinsmen in war after war for thousands of years. What made World War II so different? To begin with, it didn't help that millions of white people who fought in the war did so on the wrong side. Regardless of what every mainstream publication, documentary and feature film about the war claims, the Nazis weren't the bad guys, they were the good guys. But the Jews, thanks to their control of the media, flipped the script so instead of being the fomenters of the war, they became its innocent victims, and Hitler, who didn't want war, became the embodiment of Satan and the German people, his mass-murdering legions of the damned. I realise that if you stumbled upon this podcast thinking you were going to get Joel Osteen with a bit of Aussie wow and flutter, the very idea that Hitler was a decent bloke will be anathema to you. However, if you're prepared to pry yourself loose from a lifetime of Jew indoctrination, there are historical revisionist websites you can visit that offer meticulously researched books and essays on the more than half a century of fantastical whoppers about the Third Reich that have been paraded before us as incontrovertible facts. IHR.org is a great place to start. The main reason World War II did our race no favours is that it caused us to run smack dab into the end of God's patience. God has had it with us killing us. Thousands of years ago, he commanded our people Israel to love their neighbours. Neighbours means members of their race, even though, because of their disobedience, they would eventually fragment into smaller groups, forget their identity, and call themselves Greeks, Celts, Scythians, Gauls, and a ton of other names. They were still under his law and had to pay the penalty for breaking it, whether they believed in him or not. The penalty for murder is death. When whites kill each other in wars that haven't been approved by God, it is murder. Not justifiable homicide, murder. Proverbs chapter 6 verses 16 to 17 states that God abhors hands that shed innocent blood. They are an abomination to him. White civilizations don't last because they shed the blood of their racial neighbours with alacrity. There are other factors that contribute to their downfall, but murder, like race mixing, is one of the biggest. The post-war years saw the onset of national rot in one white country after another. In America, the big push for black civil rights began. We all know what a terrible price white Americans have had to pay for that in terms of lives and pure bloodlines lost. In the UK, growing numbers of people in blackface and brownface were given the gift of British citizenship. Now, decades later, white Brits have to deal with homegrown acts of Islamic terrorism, Pakistani child rape gangs, and a London that looks as if it belongs to a parallel universe where a confederation of Arabs, Asians, Pakis, and Caribbeans founded the British Empire. And in Australia, Victoria especially, thousands of racially mixed Italian and Greek immigrants were welcomed by a traitorous Liberal government. Don't let anyone fool you into thinking that the White Australia policy was abandoned by our government in 1973. It was given the Khyber unofficially long before that. Australia's first Minister for Immigration, Arthur Cornwall, referred to these European imports as New Australians. But we white Aussies weren't much into euphemisms back in the day, so we called them WOGs, Dagos and Spags, as in spaghetti eaters. WOGs, however, was the most popular term and the most accurate. The dictionary defines WOG as somebody who isn't white. It can also mean an illness or an infection. The WOGs who befouled Australia were both non-white and an infection, which is why we embrace the term. Although we never called them non-white, we knew on an instinctive level that that is what they were. They didn't speak like us, they didn't act like us, they didn't look like us, because they weren't us. The Italians who came here after the war were from areas of southern Italy, such as Calabria and Sicily, that had been invaded by the Moors over 1,000 years ago. The Moors were Muslims who were a ghastly blend of Arab, Berber and African. One of the ways the Moors demoralised the people they conquered was to rape the women. This they did with Allah's blessing, provided the women weren't Muslims. Muhammad must have tossed that little proviso into the Quran to excuse what he knew his followers would do anyway, since white women are a lot easier on the eye than Muslim women, the bulk of whom are non-white and are as prepossessing as a bull mastiff. With hordes of Muslim darkies raping amok, the population of southern Italy over the ensuing generations went from white to the familiar olive complexion that WOGs in Australia have. Not all Italians look like the dumpy gnome-faced mongrels we've been lumped with. The pure-blooded Lombard Italians who live in northern Italy are a fair-skinned people of German descent. You often see them in Italian movies on SBS, the leggy blonde, the luscious female redhead, yes, there are even redheaded Italians, and the sandy-haired bloke with cobalt blue eyes will all be Lombard Italians. Compare them to the Italians living down under, and the perils of race mixing will be all too apparent. Race mixing doesn't just bugger up the physical appearance of future generations, it also has a negative impact on their behaviour. I'm sure you're familiar with the expression fiery Italian. Racially mixed Itais are known for their volatile tempers, a character trait they inherited from their Moorish ancestors. The Moors weren't known for being clear-headed and easygoing. Italian immigrants also inherited an insufferable pushiness and voracious avarice second only to that of the Jews. "You give a me a cheap," was a common request I got from WOGs when I worked in retail. The chain of stores I worked for had a thing for WOG managers. There were one or two white managers, but that was about it. Every 6 months to a year, head office would swap the managers around so we'd get a different one. When it was time for this to happen, we white employees would cross our fingers that we didn't wind up with another Italian, Greek or Macedonian manager. Our aversion for WOG managers came from experience. We hated them because they treated us like crap. They were rude, surly and obnoxious because their diverse genetics made them that way. If life has taught me one lesson, it's that the fastest and surest way to become a racist is to spend some time with non-whites, and I have the WOGs in this country to thank for helping me learn that lesson. Thank you, WOGs. Australia was a land of opportunity for these non-white interlopers. If they worked hard, and many of them did, they could make plenty of money, and once they had enough of it, they bought themselves a house. You could always tell where a WOG lived. All you had to do was look for an ugly, garishly ornate home surrounded by a sea of concrete. WOGs just love concrete. I've seen WOG houses where the entire front yard has been concreted over. Sometimes they paint the concrete green. WOGs must think that green concrete looks so much like a grass lawn that the average person won't be able to tell the difference. I was a child of the 60s and 70s. In those days, WOGs were seen as second-class citizens. If you lived in an overwhelmingly white suburb, as I did, it was something of an embarrassment to have a WOG friend and an outright disgrace to have a WOG girlfriend. Even the better-looking ones weren't much easier on the eye than Michael Moore in a negligee. Speaking of Moore, did you get a load of him at the anti-Trump rally the day after Trump's inauguration? He looked like an old bull dyke. Marxism and Kentucky Fried Chicken do not mix. I haven't said a great deal about Greeks at this stage. You'll have noted that I place them in the same non-white basket as most southern Italians. The only thing modern Greeks have in common with ancient Greeks is a few vestigial strands of the latter's white DNA. Ancient Greeks were a pure white people. Many were of the tribe of Dan, who has been speculated, left Egypt by way of the sea during the Exodus, sailed the Mediterranean coastline and founded the earliest civilization in Greece. Modern Greeks, however, are a mishmash of Turkish, Aryan and Middle Eastern peoples. Non-white incursions of Greece in centuries past led to their loss of racial purity. This is why Greeks, as we know them today, lack the physical characteristics normally found in white people, such as fair, ruddy skin, blue or green eyes, and blonde or ginger hair. Modern Greeks have caramel-coloured skin, dark eyes, and dark, wiry hair. A small percentage have lighter features, but they're typically the result of a white and a Greek, to use medical parlance, getting it on. My sister married a guy who's part Sicilian. They have two sons. One is lily white, the other is mulatto brown. Despite the marked difference in their skin colour, both are racially mixed and therefore non-white. A large number of the Greeks living in Australia have married white Australians. Some of the children produced from these unions look noticeably whiter than their Greek parent. But they, like my lily white nephew, were still not white, and no amount of breeding with whites over succeeding generations can change that. Once a branch of a family tree is poisoned, it stays poisoned. Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 2. A bastard shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to his tenth generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Lord. The word bastard in this verse comes from the Hebrew word mamza, which means a person of mixed race. Some misguided folk opine that the prohibition against a mamza not being able to enter the congregation of the Lord to his 10th generation suggests that he might be able to enter once he reaches his 11th. In other words, an Israelite who is 11 generations removed from a mongrelized ancestor is supposedly pure enough to be acceptable to God. This view presents a major problem. For a mamza to reach 99.99% white racial purity, or whatever percentage will tip the scales in his favour, previous generations of his family will have had to race mix. Since the only way to breed out most of the impurity is for people who aren't pure white to mate with people who are. But that couldn't happen unless 10 generations of Israelites disobeyed God's law. Race mixing is a sin and a very serious one. See, for example, Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 1 to 3, Joshua chapter 23, verses 12 to 13, and Numbers chapter 25, verses 6 to 8. If we're to believe that racial impurity can be almost entirely eliminated this way, certainly to the extent where God will overlook it, we must also believe that one can be made pleasing to God through repeated acts of unrighteousness. In the Bible, the number 10 represents completeness, perfection, and the law, hence the Ten Commandments and the Passover lamb being selected on the 10th day. The expression 10th generation is being used purely in a symbolic sense and must mean forever because a person of mixed race, even if he falls short of 100% racial purity by the tiniest of margins, can never be perfect in his generations as Noah was. This is borne out by Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 3. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. Even to their 10th generation shall they not enter into the congregation of the Lord forever. God demands absolute purity for his creation, all his creation, plants, animals, and man. Genesis chapter 1, verse 25. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. God's standard for reproduction is kind after kind. Eagles are to breed with eagles, salmon are to breed with salmon, antelopes are to breed with antelopes, and whites are to breed with whites. Hybrids and other mixed species are an abomination to him. In fact, Christ said in Matthew chapter 15, verse 13, that every plant his father had not planted will be uprooted. He was referring to the Jewish Pharisees, who were racially mixed, but his statement extends to all living things that are products of interbreeding. God is going to uproot, destroy, every organism on the planet that is not as he made it. Mules, labradoodles, killer bees, mullards, sweet corn, lilium citronella, and mamzas will all be history, and that goes for modern Greeks. Many white nationalists believe that modern Greeks belong to the Mediterranean subgroup of the white race. If that's true, how come modern Greeks don't look white? Nordics are a white subgroup and they look white, no question about it. Why then do modern Greeks look more closely related to Arabs than to white people? Because they are more closely related to Arabs. Occam's razor, folks. Ancient Greek art and literature depict a clearly white people who look nothing like the swarthy Greeks of today. These cannot be dismissed as the work of Hellenic artists and authors who idealised their people as Nordic-looking types, because that is how ancient Greeks actually looked. They looked that way because their gene pool had yet to be polluted by non-whites. We see the same phenomenon in ancient Egypt. Prior to the ancient Egyptians adulterating their way to genetic oblivion by breeding with Nubians, they were white, and their art represented them as such. But they're not white now, and I doubt that any white nationalist would argue to the contrary. That Greeks are no longer white is not a topic open for serious discussion or any discussion in white nationalist circles. I soon discovered this when I used to post on the Daily Stormer. Andrew Anglin is a huge mark for Golden Dawn, the Greek right-wing political party. So is practically every white nationalist. In the comments section of an article on Golden Dawn he posted, I remarked that because the members of that political party weren't white, they shouldn't be held up as heroes of the, quote, movement, unquote. Well, I cop more flack than David Duke hang gliding over Jerusalem. How dare I question the racial bona fides of our brave, persecuted brothers over there by the turquoise shores of the Mediterranean? One fellow argued that because I wasn't present to see all the Greeks interbreeding with all the Turks way back when, I was in no position to call members of Golden Dawn non-white. Were you there, he asked? Well, no, I wasn't, just as you weren't at Auschwitz during World War II, so please don't tell me the Nazis didn't stuff Jews into ovens. A lady argued that I should accept Greeks as whites because not all whites look Nordic. She was right, not all whites do look Nordic. But even somebody with dark hair and hazel eyes looks white if indeed he or she is white. Greeks look no whiter than Syrians, Lebanese or Turks. Don't believe me? Do a Google image search of Golden Dawn political party and see how many white party members you can find. I included some photos of Golden Dawn officials in an article I posted on my blog, Christian Identity Australia. There's one where they're storming out of the Hellenic Parliament. If the men in that photo weren't members of Golden Dawn, there would not be a single white nationalist who would pronounce them white. But because they're members of Golden Dawn, they get a clean bill of Aryan health. You see, Golden Dawn, and by extension all Greeks, must be white because they're standing up for their country against Zog and are an inspiration to people in the movement everywhere. Funny, the last time I looked, patriotism did not equate to white racial purity, not even when it's exercised under heavy Jew fire. The president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, is a proud patriot who has resisted the Jews more than most. Is he white? How about the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, Mahathir Mohamad, who in 2001 stated before a conference of global leaders that the Jews rule the world? Is he white? And what about the Egyptians, who produced and broadcast a TV series called Horse Without a Horseman that was based in part on the protocols of the learned elders of Zion? Are they white? Ancient Greece is considered the cradle of Western civilization. It was known for its seminal achievements in art, literature, architecture, science, mathematics, philosophy and civics, which millenniums later still have a resounding influence on the world. But what's modern Greece known for? It's food and music. How did ancient Greece, which led the world in every field of human endeavour, crumble into the pile of underachievement that is contemporary Greece? The answer is it's not populated by the same race of people. This is proven by history and anthropology and by simply opening one's eyes, yet it's something a lot of white nationalists refuse to accept. They would rather go on believing that modern Greeks possess the same unsullied DNA that drove the vastly outnumbered Spartans to hold back the Persian army, because they crave to see and draw inspiration from fellow whites defying Zog. It gives them hope that all is not lost for the white race and encourages them to stand up to the biblical enemy themselves. Nothing wrong with that. However, problems arise when that inspiration grows so scarce that they draw it from people who aren't white but who act in the kind of racially conscious manner whites ought to. Witness the obsession some white nationalists have with the Japanese and their culture. Unlike most white countries, Japan isn't in a mad rush to commit national harakiri because the Japanese see diversity for the racial cyanide it is. White nationalists, understandably, admire this commitment to homogeneity, if only their admiration ended there. Younger white nationalists have a thing for Japanese animation, or anime. Go to a website like the Daily Stormer and you'll see anime images everywhere. They're in the articles, comment sections, people even use them as avatars. This proliferation of mantis-headed, almond-eyed anime characters on websites that are supposed to be pushing for the survival of the white race and culture is irony with rocket boosters. Pro-white fans of anime insist that their love for Japanese animation is just a bit of harmless fun and stress that anime is a lot whiter politically than anything Jewish Hollywood is producing, which, when you think about it, isn't saying much. But what they fail to see is that by festooning pro-white websites with anime pics, they're glorifying the work of an alien culture, one that has a very dark side to it. Anime is usually based on manga, Japanese comics. A significant percentage of manga features hardcore pornography. The Japs call this porno manga hentai. Two subgenres of hentai are lolicon and shotokon. Lolicon depicts underage girls having sex, often with adult males, and shotokon depicts underage boys having sex, often with adult females. Both are nothing more than illustrated kiddie porn. You would think that this kind of porn would be available only in the sleaziest, dingiest basements and back alleys of Japan, but you would be wrong. It's for sale on newsstands and in brightly lit shops on busy city streets. Guys in business suits read phone book thick copies of it on the way to work in packed commuter trains. It has become a part of Japanese pop culture. Why would anyone rhapsodise over a culture where kiddie porn is accepted enough to be widely available? Although lolicon and shotokon don't involve flesh and blood children having sex for real, like illegal but probably not for long kiddie porn, that doesn't make either okay or something we should overlook because the Japanese like dressing up as Nazis and have a strong nationalistic bent. White nationalists ought to shun the Japs for their perverted culture, which is born of their race and because they're not white. I repeat, they are not white. Did I mention they are not white? Posting images of pubescent anime girls in miniskirts on pro-white blogs does not become anyone with a vested interest in the survival of our race. Nor does allying oneself with Golden Dawn. That so many white nationalists can't or won't see modern Greeks for what they are highlights a serious deficiency in the movement. What good is any pro-white movement if its members can't tell the difference between white and manifestly non-white? I would have thought the ability to do so would be a basic requirement for membership, but then I'm one of those unreasonable people who expects a cardiologist to know a heart from a gallbladder. I mentioned the Daily Stormer a little earlier. I reckon that well-patronised blog must have more Jews and anti-fascists trolling it than Stormfront and Vanguard News Network Forum combined. Add to that all of the militant pagans, atheists, crackpots and Fruit Loops who loiter there, and the chances of your casting pearls before swine in the comment threads are as high as breathing bad air in Beijing. I'm not saying you should never post there, I'm just saying don't make it your life's work to convert undercover Israelis and the blind and the blithering to Christian identity. One troll in particular took exception to my comments about Golden Dawn. In an effort to refute them, he posted a link to a blog with quotes from several books declaring Latter-day Greeks to be white, which proves Arthur C. Clarke's theory that for every expert there is an equal and opposite expert. This was when the Daily Stormer's comment threads were hosted on Discuss. Discuss lets you view a member's previous comments in his profile, provided he hasn't disabled that option. Most trolls disable it. That way you won't see any anti-white comments they may have posted on other blogs. But this troll didn't disable his, so I had a good squiz at his comment history. Oddly, every comment he'd made, bar the few he'd posted on the Daily Stormer in response to my remarks, was about pro-wrestling. Why did this major pro-wrestling fan suddenly become so keenly interested in a thread about Golden Dawn on a white racist blog, and my comments in particular? Was he a Greek? He never said he was. From memory, the blog he linked to was the top Google search result for the term Are Greeks White? And the list of books he posted was on the blog's homepage. Obviously, he saw my comments, did a snap Google search for, quote, definitive proof, unquote, that I was wrong, and found it in seconds flat. But if he was so adamant that I was wrong, why did he have to do a Google search to prove it? Didn't he know already why modern Greeks are, quote, white, unquote? The reality is, he knew I was telling the truth. He knew that modern Greeks are chalk to ancient Greeks as cheese, but being a Jew troll, he wasn't about to admit that. His brief was to encourage whites to obliterate themselves through race mixing by promoting the lie that the only difference between a modern Greek and a Swedish swimwear model is a designer bikini. He was sure to convince some of the Daily Stormer's white readers that if ever they're in a position to lock loins with a Greek member of the opposite sex, there's no good reason they shouldn't. After all, a guy far more interested in the latest WWE pay-per-view than the planned genocide of our race said it's okay. This has been a dreadfully rambling segment, but I've finally arrived at my main point. I was playing Spot the Aussie at my local shopping centre. This involves looking for white Australians in a busy public place. There weren't many, but what the shopping centre lacked in Aussies it made up for in third world detritus. As usual, there were generous sprinklings of Asians, Arabs, Indians, and people so racially mixed that their family trees must look like a schematic for a complex circuit. Then it occurred to me, if all the Asians, all the Arabs, all the Indians, and all the schematics were disappeared, there would still be all the Italians and Greeks to contend with. And more white Australians have shared their DNA with these last two groups than all the others. This is because WOGs have been living here longer. As the tsunami of more alien-looking races continues to sweep through Australia's cities and suburbs, Italians and Greeks, especially those who are second and third generation Australians, are going to look whiter and whiter in comparison. Notwithstanding, white they will never be. Mating with any of them will trash your bloodline just as quickly and absolutely as if you had hooked up with a plate-lipped Bantu. The best advice I can give every white Aussie is do not socialise with Italians and Greeks living here, because I can pretty much guarantee that none of them is untainted. And if one or two are, stiff cheddar. Better to favour caution than to kill your racial heritage by dallying with a mutt. Don't be afraid that people on the Daily Stormer will abuse you for your stance. These are the same people who believe that Christ wears a yarmulke and that it's okay to genuflect to a badly drawn cartoon frog. Who gives a Charles Giuliani what they say? The Bible assures us that Christ will return just in the nick of time to save our race from extinction. There is some bad news, though. Two-thirds of us are going to be destroyed. Plague and civil and nuclear war will likely contribute to the death toll, but race mixing will surely outdo the lot of them. Race mixing is self-inflicted, self-perpetuating genocide. It's self-perpetuating since just about every mixed-race child will have children of his or her own. Then those children will have children, then those children will have children, and so forth. As this exponential increase in the number of mongrels occurs, so does an exponential decrease in the number of pure whites until none remains. God sent the flood because race mixing in Noah's day was epidemic. With the Jewish media constantly ramping up their diversity propaganda and whites forced to interact with growing numbers of non-whites, it's about to become epidemic again. Let's be vigilant not to say or do anything to make the situation worse. This is the Ted Mowry Gang with Jump in My Car.
Jump in my car, I wanna take you home. Jump in my car, it's too far to walk on your own.
No thank you, sir.
Ah, come on, I'm a trustworthy guy.
No thank you, sir.
Oh, little girl, I wouldn't tell you no lie.
I know you can.
How can you say that we only just met?
You're on the same.
Ooh, she's got me there. But I'll get her yet.
I got you then.
No, you didn't. I was catching my breath. And look, it's starting to rain. And maybe you'll catch your death.
Well, I don't know.
Ah, come on, it costs nothing to try. And you'll arrive home nice and dry. Jump in my car. jump in my car. I wanna take you home. Come on, jump in my car. It's too far to walk on your own.
Maybe I will.
Ah, that's better now. You're talking sense.
Keep this game still.
Well, if you like, I'll just put up a fence.
You get smart.
Well, alright, we'll soon be on our
you look up.